Well, what would they know is like recording us now, or just chit chat, hoping that somebody says something a wee bit funny that just goes on the start.
Something funny.
Something.
There you go. That's it done.
Hello and welcome to episode 68 of Crusty's Third Nipple. The podcast is unnecessary as phoning around your mates on a Sunday morning, hoping to piece together the night before.
And you gave us one crucial piece of advice, or memory, and that was, yeah, you got kicked out of that pub.
But you weren't that dick.
But I wasn't a dick.
That was
how you need
to kick. Exactly.
But I guess it's kind of like...
fear, man. Yeah. It's kind of like the blind leading the blind, if they were as drunk as you were, because then they don't remember either.
That's it. Yeah. Well, I kind of... towards the end of the night, I got more clear.
Yeah?
I got better. But there was the whole bits when the rugby was on, just gone.
I didn't even remember seeing any rugby whatsoever.
Vaguely remember just fairly nicely getting declined entry to an establishment. It's the end of the night for me.
My name's Kieran, and joining me as ever are Dan.
Hello.
And Tarek.
Hi.
And this is a good old recommendations episode. Hi. Where we bring you the best and worst of our viewing over the past few weeks, as well as a general catch up with all things Crusty. And with that, we will introduce our guest for today. You've heard him already. He's been a classmate, a workmate, a flatmate, and now, after a little persuasion, I can now call him a crusty mate. All the way from Dumfries and Galloway, it's Mark.
Hey.
Woo-hoo, go Mark. Yes.
Thanks so much for having me at Crusty HQ. Appreciate it.
We actually flew about.
He's here for his stag day, this stag weekend.
Uh-huh.
This is kind of an extension of it.
So we're all feeling... still a little bit rough Monday evening after that.
Yeah, I still looking forward to a few more beers though.
Leah was on a hen do the same night in the ferry, and they were upstairs in a pub, and the mum of the bride and a couple of pals treated them to a wee surprise with a dress that was like ABBA and sang ABBA songs. Just put like Claire right in the middle of the room, and I did that. And I saw that, I was like, oh shit man, we should have busted out the guitars and went Bare Naked Ladies or something.
That would be good, eh?
A bit of Taylor Swift or something would have been appreciated.
You know, it was telling me like the hedges that like was on a lot more organised and a lot more like, okay, by 9 we're here, by 10 we're there.
Yeah, 100%.
And yours were, which pub?
pub or 12. Meet somewhere.
Yeah.
As soon as there's any deviation, fate, pub, it's like, what the fuck is it? Yeah. Honestly. Stop showing off, just gotta eat the pub.
That was a really good night.
There you go.
Oh, but I suppose for what I hear, there was a bit of Bare Naked Lady action later on. So for some people,
not for me, unfortunately.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, okay.
I missed that, sadly.
It was at Paradise recently, right? For a thingy.
Hospitality.
Right. And I was here last time when I got the invite, was it? And that was good. Like really good fun. You just go in, you get the booze beforehand, you get the meal, you get the fucking.
Is this when you jump the gun at 1-0, trying to take some pot shots out of that
panic? Honestly, it was less than 4 minutes in, and Queen's Park had scored, and I was like, fuck's sake, I put United on the equipment just to market its interest. I have no interest in Dundee United winning or losing.
Yeah.
But when you see them, that's enough of like angry fan base you guys have got here. You're going to fly the league, and as soon as they go by, then fucking shite, man. Fuck, you can't fly.
I love Scottish football because if you're down at half time, you're getting booed out the tunnel.
That's inspiring.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like when somebody scores. So United came back 1-4-1 right at half days, and like when somebody scores, the kind of announcer plays a song that's kind of linked to the player that scored somehow, like a chant or something, right? So United have got a player called McMahon, right? And he scored.
No way. No chance. Yeah.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think there must be somebody in the United media team that's a wrestling fan, because I remember Johnny Russell, they were going for the Russell Mania t-shirts and everything.
Yeah.
ten plus years ago.
You did some work for them, eh?
Kind of volunteer capacity, just match reporting.
Fucking hell,
many moons ago.
You get boys doing that on their phones and I'll just turn them up on YouTube and just putting themselves celebrating. It's so bizarre, eh?
Yeah, there is YouTubers that like kind of tour stadiums or clubs or something like that, and they always check out, oh, what's the club store like, and so I make a day of it. Or here's like Dundee, or here's the local pubs that the clubs go to, the fans of the clubs go to and stuff like that. So yeah, there is a kind of an interest of going around that.
Yeah, nice job if you can get it, man, just going round pubs and watching football.
Yeah, I know,
and celebrating when, what was that, St Mirren scored?
It was Queen's Park.
Queen's Park.
Not as good as it, man. I got one we have to catch up on, right, unless you do.
No, I'm still just...
Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Right, you went to see it?
I went to see it.
Good.
I was putting in the Discord, like, what am I going to do to stay awake? Because it was on early skating duty that day, so that means I'm up for Fev, right? And the Oppenheimer started just after 8.
It's 3 hours.
It's going to finish after 11.
Yeah. My suggestion was that you get that large freestyle cup, so it's like the fizzy juice, and it's huge. And it's like, what do you do if you need a toilet? And it's like, well, you still got the big cup. You don't need to leave your seat.
Just right through that straw.
Yeah.
So I had a packet of munchies, right? My favourite, fucking Bombay Max. And I thought, right, I'll wait until the first hour's gone. And then open and
I can't make it past the trailers.
But I was in a family size pack. It was a small pack, so like half an hour that was done, and sure enough, fucking fell asleep there.
Oh,
just
my God.
The window, like, fell asleep like out. I was like kept nodding off, and so in the middle of convo, sessions in the woods, I was this is just so bad. I was getting so angry with myself. And I was missing all these fucking... I did catch the explosion, though.
Well, you would have woken up.
Well, I suppose, yeah. But it's like, it kind of was going. Worth going for that.
Yeah.
See that on a big screen was pretty dramatic, like.
That is, like, made for... it was baked in for a Krusty Award. Like, the film to see the big screen, yeah.
To see that on whatever it says that screen is, it was something else.
Like. Yeah.
Do I think what other big massive moments they've got in the film that's...
Well, Nate, it's just people talking, is it?
Aye.
For 3 years and one explosion.
Two.
Well, do you see the...
It's just one massive one, but then there's the aftermath.
Both seen it.
We've all seen it.
Not quite 100% on the amount of explosions.
I think I got excuses.
Let's just ages
ago.
We've all seen it, and me and Tara kind of spoke at length about it to Dad to get him to watch it, and now he's seen it. So.
Wow. It was devastating because I kind of knew it was good. I was enjoying it, but I just didn't get a sense of how it ended. Really,
it does have that known thing of. He said he doesn't care about the audio levels, explosion aside, but like, there's times where the soundtrack, I noticed this a lot in Tenet, I couldn't hear a word anyone was saying because the score was just so loud.
Mm.
Or they were trying to explain a crucial part and somebody would be talking over them. And so, in Operator, there's not as bad as that, but there, as you say, a lot of talking. And there is, like you said, like three timelines on the go at the same time.
Mm.
So you don't know the importance of what somebody said 27 minutes ago.
Until that moment,
you're like, oh, okay, I see it now.
And intermittent naps doesn't help.
Yeah. So this is a really important part when Dad goes...
So would you go and see it again?
No, I wouldn't go and pay for it again. I'll just wait.
It'd probably be better in the house with subtitles, and then you can watch it in the kitchen, then you can fill around, do other things, and... keep an eye on it at the same time.
Subtitles is a good thing. I used to be like dead against them, and now I kind of struggle with them. Especially in a Nolan movie, yeah, definitely.
I kind of got addicted to the subtitles.
I don't like the subtitles on all the time. Izzy tends to just put subtitles on constantly, so I'm used to it. It's good because you do miss things, but sometimes you spend too much time looking at them and know kind of seeing what their reactions are on the screen.
Actors, so yeah, yeah.
I'm watching something just now. It's in French, but obviously with Netflix you can get the English dub, and I hate that. It puts it off. It puts me off. See, when there's just no match in the lips.
Yeah, yeah.
And it generally, you just don't get a sense of that character, like in terms of like how their voice actually is, because it's just some fucking American.
I did watch Squid Games with the English dub.
Oh, I was gonna ask.
Just because there's like 400 characters and there's a lot going on and stuff like that. So I was thinking, okay, I'm gonna actually need to make sure I'm digesting everything. Mm. But if it's like Lupin, I saw an episode of that. I was like, I was perfectly fine with that being in French, because you've still got that. Because main character's very animated at times, so it's good to hear his voice rather than.
Exactly, that's it, yeah. Yeah.
It sounds so much like an audio description or like a audiobook or something like that. A dub sometimes, so it's just monotone.
Yeah.
I'd done the same with Squid Game. Watched the kind of the dubbed version, but I'd heard other people said it's better with the subtitles.
I kind of did it with both.
That
and
program.
Then,
oh my god.
Oh, that's
red light, green light.
Yeah.
It's like 60 people getting murdered in 90 seconds. It's rough.
But I should finish Squid Game.
You probably shouldn't have watched it.
Really?
Yeah. I think I only watched the first three episodes and then I just didn't bother going back.
I guess if you're not finding the appeal of it, then it's not worth it. But there's a lot of character work. You do quickly get past the shock value of people are dying for real. You know, you do kind of get in. But there's big things happening with that show. There was a season 2 is going to come out eventually. And they made Netflix itself made. Like a reality show, but people doing that. I think that's coming out soon as well.
I think there's something on Netflix at the moment, and it's kind of like styled as a real life Squid Game, but of course, the games are pretty wimpy compared to
Squid
Game. They're just like wrestling over a ball.
Shot off and stuff.
And you lose interest after an episode and a half.
Of a Squid Game episode, when you watch it the first time, is you and them have no idea what this game is, what the work, what the loophole is, what's the cheat. How you can get by and stuff like that. If it's a reality show, then you're just like, oh, I know this one, I'll just stop.
It's really good. Yeah, because they don't know if we've got an advantage going first or waiting.
Yeah, there's other numbers, the games they pick the numbers off the vest and they have no idea if that was good or bad, and they end up being that glass bridge one. So.
Right.
Like it's absolutely shit. So yeah, but then people were like, no, I'll go last because I know it's the best one in the reality show. So I think it'll take the fun out of it. And they're not dying as well. That's the main reason.
Right, we're moving on to recommendations unless anybody else has got something to share.
No.
Try
going in, Tarek.
All right, okay. Oof. I'll go first. So still on the Netflix side of things. I've watched a six-part miniseries, Painkillers.
I saw that advertised, but I never actually clicked on it.
So it's kind of a portrayal of the opioid epidemic that was still rife in America. Mm. It's got quite a few big-name actors in it, but right at the start of this was the kind of thing that got me. They've got just a random person kind of just saying like, this is it's actors, a lot of these scenarios are just kind of made for entertainment purposes, but this is me, this is how the opioid crisis hit me, and they talk about their family for a couple of seconds before you actually get into each one of the episodes.
Okay.
Which was a really kind of good wee start. It does grip you right there. And you're just like,
so
right,
a dramatisation of real life events sort of thing.
Yeah, right. And then they're giving you their wee bit.
That's quite interesting, because you do see these shows that some of them are criticised for exploiting or like not being kind to people that were affected by the events in real life. So I guess if you have, if you're making it with those kind of people in mind,
on board, kind of,
yeah,
saying that
that's better. Because I remember like, also like the Dahmer show and stuff like that was hit pretty badly, because the people were like, we had no idea the show was even happening and stuff like
that's
that.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
So the show is like six episodes, about 1 hour an episode. So you've got kind of like three different viewpoints for this crisis. You've got the family, the Sacklers, Richard Sackler. He's runs the main pharmaceutical company who kind of pushed the OxyContin. So you get to kind, you get to see his kind of rise to the power that he got to, and how he was pushing it, and how he was just really kind of saying like, okay, well, we'll actually we'll limit the number of the lower end hard hitting drugs, and we'll just add the power into the strength on these ones, and we'll push them even more. So you've got him. He's played by Matthew Broderick. You've also got the reps, who the pharmaceutical company are kind of pushing out, or going to all the doctors and how they're manipulating the doctors to buy these drugs and get them just as standard painkillers. It's just all about the money. But there's a girl. All the reps tend to be kind of college girls, so well educated, right, fresh out of college, looking for a job. Pretty girls, so they're able to talk the talk to the doctors, as well as kind of just totally push, and just they're after the money. One of the girls that's in it, you get a real good character arc of her, because she starts off just kind of like just a scribe, quite fresh faced, but then you see her kind of going for the money, then you see her kind of getting little glimmers of what's actually happening and how it's affecting the community. And then you the conscience building up and building up, which is brilliant. Then you've got another person, you've got Edie, she's the truth seeker. So right at the start, she's looking to stop any doctors from over prescribing any drugs to anybody. So she's kind of like a doctor detective, if you like. So she's wanting to check it, and she notices that these drugs are getting over-prescribed all the time, and then she starts digging into it more, and you see why she's doing this, and how her past is kind of pushing her on to actually get to the bottom of this. And there's a great scene where she's just kind of, she's sitting at a table, they're way interviewing, because she's getting chatted to from another set of people that are trying to get the Sacklers, and they said, we've interviewed Sackler. And she goes, where? Here? He's like, yeah. He's like, did he sit in the seat? He's like, yeah. So she gets up and moves the seat. She's like, I don't want to be associated by anything. I don't even want to touch things that he's touched. The hatred that she's got for this guy. She's like, just absolutely nothing. I don't want anything to do with him.
That one?
That's the one, yeah. Right. So it's great, over-dramatised. You've also got another family man, where you see he's runs a garage and he falls, hurts his back. Then he starts taking these opioids, and then you kind of see the demise of where it goes with him, how he kind of becomes an addict, and how he tries to get himself out of it, and then the whole, how it impacts the family and everything like that, and his business. So you get that aspect. I think they could have done a lot more with that, and they could have kind of pushed on that a wee bit more, getting not just one person from that. You do get splices from him kind of looking or dealing with other people that are on OxyContin. But not enough. I think they could really push into it a wee bit more.
Maybe that's like, again, not wanting to go in too much in like the victim side of it, and more just like, here's the system. Like, here's the how it came so crooked and stuff. Like,
yeah,
that.
It's a massive epidemic here. Yeah. We're not just going to. That these drugs are bad.
Do they speak to Sackler? You see that?
Yeah.
Was he's every cell?
Well, he's just like, I'm just. Painkillers. I'm just trying to
make sure service.
He's just doing the service.
I am an investigator with the U.S. Attorney's Office. You lie, you hurt people, you go down.
You ever prosecute a company as big as Purdue Pharma?
Sackler.
All of human behavior is essentially comprised of two things. Run from pain, run toward pleasure. Pain, pleasure, pain, pleasure. If we place ourselves right there, between pain and pleasure, we will never have to worry about money again.
Pain is no longer something we have to tolerate. We have an answer.
How can something legally prescribed be killing so many people?
Tell me what words you associate with oxycodone.
Oxy what?
Funny fact about this was, funny fact. The V&A just removed the plaque from the Sackler family. So Dundee's V&A actually had a plaque for the Sacklers, and they just took that down.
See, that's a lot of these cunts becomes so-called philanthropist to to
the
clean
money,
their image.
That's exactly what they were totally whitewashing themselves with all these different charities and museums and schools.
What the
VNA going to
do though is like take off a bit of the roof that you the fucking paid for. Yeah.
Don't look at that. Here's an umbrella.
I mean, like, fair enough if they've done it, because
It shows that they're kind of, they know that they're not going to be associated with these people.
Yeah,
it's just
fair. But they've taken the money and spent it.
Yeah, exactly. and I've heard that it's quite like Dope Sick.
I've heard about Dope Sick.
And I think that's a bit more hard hitting than this.
Right.
So if you're going to go down an opioid
just by the name,
crisis,
it sounds that sounds more focused on what's going on at the bottom levels.
Yeah. So if you're fancying something like this, I would say watch this one first, Painkillers, and then go into Dope Sick if you're really wanting to get into
what do you
hard
make of that, the way it was, the way that there was like dramatisation and then somebody speaking, and cause I think I've saw something like that before and I found it so false, you know, the drama part. I'd rather just know about what the real people are saying.
No,
that was just them talking.
Yeah, no. It's not, you don't get too much of the actual dramatised.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's more just kind of the characters driving the whole thing through.
Yeah, yeah.
You only get a little bit at the start of each episode of the actual real people.
Okay, yeah.
So it's more just kind of character.
It's interesting because it can go from that to, like maybe call it the Big Short.
Mm-hmm.
That is a dramatisation of what happened, and then there's pauses where people explain what's going on. I know it's celebrities in that case, but that's kind of more. Is that more just all dramatization then?
No, I think
there is factual,
kind of required because of the complicated nature of what's going on.
Yeah,
I kind of feel the need to explain it for not as racist, stupid people, just for layman people.
Yeah,
like,
but that is still like there's like narration and there's like, oh, you won't believe what Steve Carell is about losing shit right now.
Yeah,
so they do kind of almost pause the film to say, oh, okay, well, you know, like, here's this
there's
is going on.
There's a movie out just now, and I think it's called Stupid Money.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And that's obviously about trading as well. But what they do, and it's a bit like Billions as well, is they make people looking at computers and losing money and then winning money and waiting to the last minute, just like fucking exciting. Without explaining the mechanisms of how that's actually happening. Do you know what I mean?
I want to know how
I watch
see people lose money and make money for them.
I watched
that actual Netflix documentary on the GameStop crisis and stuff like that, all that went on
that as well, yeah.
At the time, so I kind of knew a bit about it. And then when I saw a trailer with like, oh, here's Paul Dano, here's Pete Davidson, and they're all just kind of making fun of it, I was like, oh, that's going to be pretty interesting. So, but yeah.
You haven't seen it? No.
I haven't seen it, but I do want to see it.
Okay.
It just did sound like, as it was happening, I was thinking, someone's making a movie about this.
Mm.
You know,
really?
It's felt
like
in real time, yeah.
How open it is to be manipulated. Like in
this
day and age, because it's all kind of based on the premise that you invest on their quarterly reports and their prospects.
Mm.
And but if it's just a guy on YouTube telling you to buy this stock and to disregard all the other indicators, like billions of pounds were funneled away. A lot of people got very rich off that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know this was possible. So usually a stock is an investment. I want this to do the good.
Yeah.
But essentially, like a lot of the like trust funds and stuff like that who had very rich people's money were betting against GameStop, the company. They wanted to demise. They wanted to go in the way of like Blockbuster and stuff like that. And so if that were to ever go up, they would lose money.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that guy, that YouTuber, and a lot of other people became a trend. Oh, we can make a lot of money and then screw over these uber rich people, and there's no way we can get it back. And it was off this app, Robinhood, this like investing app. And then I watched it, by the end of it, the call came from up high, and Robinhood just blocked people from trading because I think it's too many powerful people were losing money, so
the chick was convincing enough people to follow and at the same.
A lot of people, a lot of people didn't make money, but then it's almost like
a lot of people lost a lot of money as well. So
it's almost like if the way it was portrayed in the documentary, like when the common people start making too much money off the rich person's die, like they've got to shut it down.
The game will change.
The households wins kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Baz, we'll stick with you then for that.
Okay. Well, I went and saw Saw. I went and saw it with Sophie, and it turns out we're both big Saw fans. So when it comes to this like, even though it's the 10th film in the franchise, and there's like a spin-off and a film that's half a prequel, half of it in the future, this one's in between the first and second movies.
Right. Okay. So it's taking you back.
Yeah, yeah.
So which is handy because Jigsaw, when did he die?
So he dies.
Sorry for any
spoilers. Spoilers.
Jesus Christ.
Well, the films have been up for a while, but yeah, he dies in the third one, but the third and fourth one are happening at the same time. Which is there the twist go. In those
so
movies.
But what I'm saying, in this case, it's handy that they made a film between them because he's still alive.
Yeah. And so this is, it's kind of like the Saw version of, oh, we brought all back all the characters so you could clap and applaud and stuff like that. So,
did you clap and applaud?
I was like, yay!
Go, Jigsaw!
But essentially,
no chance.
Essentially, this one.
What was the expedition move?
I don't know. But in this one, I was shocked for the first like 40 minutes. So I realized that, like, this is actually a movie. It's not like a Saw film where it's just, okay, here's all the traps, here we go straight away.
Right.
Because, like, as I think most people know, Jigsaw, John Kramer, has cancer. And then that's what kind of led him down that path.
Right, okay.
And so. in this film, he gets the diagnosis and he gets really depressed and stuff like that, and he thinks he's got nothing he can do, and then he hears this kind of like the bear, you know, the grief family thing, but it's like a cancer support group that of a miracle cure, and these people that were on the run because like a lot of the pharmaceutical companies try to shut them down and move from country to country.
Fucking big pharma, man.
So yeah, that's what they're like. So like, you just gotta come down to Mexico and get. We can just do this like groundbreaking thing. So he falls for it, essentially, and then he realizes later on that he's been scammed for a lot of money, and that these people have done this to a lot of people, and then they don't know. Until, well.
So does he enact revenge on them?
Yes, essentially.
So is he
a nanny
hero?
Exactly, that's what this kind of thing is. A lot of the time, Jigsaw is trying to be outside, he's more like looking down on people. He's kind of like outside, removed from the equation of like, I'm not personally involved, it's not revenge. But this one, it kind of is. He still gives them the chance to escape and learn their lessons in his crazy way. But this is, it's almost like John Wick of the films, where it's just pure revenge.
The cancer is still spreading. I'm afraid there's nothing else we can do. There is one person who might be able to help.
Our program is a two-pronged treatment outside Mexico City. The results have been stunning.
She saved my life.
You're in very good hands with us.
After that, what happens then?
Your whole life happens then, John Kramer.
According to these scans, the tumor was never removed.
How much time do I have?
Months, at best.
I still have a lot of work that needs to be done.
It is really good because it does mix up the formula of a Saw film, and you don't need to know all this like twists and turns in the knowledge. Like, you could watch it, but okay, that's Jigsaw, that's Amanda, his helper, these are the bad guys. You know, it's a very easy film to hop on, even if you don't know the 10, well, the 9.
Are you saying disregard 2 to 9?
Yeah, you don't need to know them, so. But yeah, it's a pretty good film. I'd definitely revisit it, and it was just a good mix of what makes Saw that usually you can kind of think, oh, okay, I know this is it's going.
You see, out of all the Saws,
yeah,
which one's your favourite?
That's a tough one. Because,
I don't think it's going to be anywhere between 7, 8 or 9, because I reckon they're just, oh, God, let's just get these done so we can get to 10.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, the last two beforehand, those are the ones that are they seem like cash grabs more. Like the last one, Spiral, that was the Chris Rock one.
That was
the spin-off one. And then the one before that, Jigsaw, I really didn't like because it messed with the timeline of events. These films are very twisty and turny, and this one just kind of didn't do it justice, I don't think. So I think my favourite one, I quite like the earlier ones. So like, the first one is obviously very good, and you can tell it's had more of an artistic vision than when we pumped it every year. I really like the second one, which is controversial. That's the one with Donnie Wahlberg. Right. If you remember that.
So it's controversial.
The house in that one?
Yeah, yeah. It's good. It's controversial because...
Controversial choice or controversial movie?
Choice.
Amongst officials.
I think...
what do you call yourselves?
I don't know. I really want to say saw heads because then I might get a head chopped off or something.
Saw heads.
I think I like six or seven I quite like as well.
Right.
Just because... The whole franchise is just kind of turned on its head at that point. You're just there for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. I think it becomes difficult because they've got those films, there's always like a twist for the sake of it, and it doesn't really make sense in that one particular film. And then if you start to tote that up over 7, 8, 9 films, like it's all over the place with the narrative. And
so, these films are
trying to make him a good guy in this recent one, justify his actions with a...
Well, that's the thing, he's always kind of put himself on the moral high ground, and it is questioned in this film, but it's always like, he's trying to get other people to cherish their life or atone for their terrible actions. So
on that, right, so you've seen Saw 1,
yeah.
You've seen Saw 10, which is then the next one in the lineage.
Lineage, yeah.
Does Saw 2 fit with the kind of ending of Saw 10?
This is like a fun little adventure. Side piece. So it's like
with no real consequence.
I would say it's pretty understandable, even though like these films get pumped out year after year, and they were kind of thing. And some of them, like the second one, it was a script for another movie, and then they just kind of tweaked it and said, "Jigsaw's in here."
Yeah.
That's always kind of controversial because it's a different film.
I mean, it would be some ballsy move, like if they, they hit with gold, like with Saw.
Yeah.
Right. And then they started Saw 2 and think, what we're going to do is make 10 movies and we're going to put something in here that equates to the 10th one.
It's not like...
That's pretty ballsy they're going to get to 10.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
These ones
were... franchise. We're starting the franchise today.
These ones, there was kind of the early 2000s pumping out horror films, getting this franchise up, and then that was quickly overtaken by Paranormal Activity. That was the next craze. And so you kind of had to be a Saw fan to keep...
Sawhead.
Your Saw head. they still made a lot of money, and they still, I think it was a good, it was great films like, oh, let's go get a buddy and let's all go to the cinema and see it. And I was speaking to Sophie about it, and I was thinking what are other franchises that people have vague recollections of? Like, you can speak to somebody and they'll give you something about Saw 5, and it's just like, how do you know that and that? Other things. There's just, I don't know, it sticks in my head.
It's surprising me that there's that many Saws from the first time that they've made one. I mean, the first one couldn't have been done that long ago.
Over 20 years.
Yeah. No
wow,
way.
It's made, the franchise has made more than $1 billion in the box office alone.
Jesus, man.
That is ridiculous.
That's frightening.
So, the first one came out in 2004. So, 20 years ago.
20 years ago, jeez, man. It does just feel like I just watched it a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The first one, probably this.
But yeah, again...
Did you just say
that
you watched it 20 years ago?
No, a couple of years ago. Yeah,
but it is a franchise I love, and it's kind of like one of those ones where... I know it's a mess.
But you're like okay with that?
Yeah.
It's your mess.
Yeah. And everybody focuses just on traps. I like the almost soap opera-esque drama of this accomplice is betraying this other accomplice and they're trying to take over the jigsaw.
That's why
he's
wrestling
fun. Yeah. That's why I was saying that as well. It's just like...
The quadruple across.
Everyone's like, it's kind of like that though, where it's like people honing one thing, oh, wrestling's fake. It's like, yeah, I get that. But I enjoy it more now because these are real people that do this stupid thing. Why?
But it's such a stupid thing for people to say.
Yeah.
Somebody's talking to me and working about EastEnders. I'm like, That's so fake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Ridiculous argument for we're watching TV here.
Yeah. But people are like, yeah, but you see the Game of Thrones, isn't it? The guy back to life and then...
With the dragons, yeah. How realistic. Yeah.
And they summoned the spirit and they killed somebody. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And Undertaker came back to life.
Exactly.
Speaking of that, I think that's your cue, Mac.
To come in on the wrestling. So yeah, no, when wrestling's done right, it's simple. I'm not going to pretend it's The Wire in terms of like episodic storytelling, but... I mean, just you'll be familiar with Christian Cage and Edge, their little reunion recently. Three words from Christian Cage, and it's just table set for the next few months. It was beautiful the way that it was done. Mr. Shakespeare would be proud.
So even I know a lot about this. Edge, like career-ending injury, came back to life and got his kind of WWE return, but that kind of ship sailed and now he's went to another organisation, is that right?
It's gone to the rival one. So Tony Khan, the Fulham
Michael Jackson
owner, chairman. Yeah, he started his own promotion. But on that...
No, I didn't know any of this. So I'm getting an education right now.
So yeah, Tony Khan, he owns Fulham. He owns the Jacksonville Jaguars. And he's like, his daddy's a billionaire. So he's like, I want to start a wrestling TV show. And his old man's broke him off a few hundred million to achieve it. So it's been going for about 4 years.
Shashan Khan was quoted as saying, yeah, I want them to spend their inheritance before I die.
Yes, yeah.
You're that dad?
Yeah. Where's Tarek's wrestling?
Where's my ring, dad?
So just the kind of Edge comeback, it was just how it was done was brilliant. Obviously, he was getting like a little 15-minute segment on TV. Comes out, the entrance music, all the pyro and ballyhoo and pomp and circumstance. He gives his little speech. He was retired for so long. Me, me, me. I want to have a match with this guy. Me, me, me. Poor me. And then at the very end, kind of puts out there that he'd also like to have a little reunion with his partner, Christian Cage, because they've not wrestled for, I don't know, 10 plus years.
So Christian comes out and he's giving it. WWE at the same time.
The
90s, yeah. And so it became the big tag team and stuff like that.
And Christian's giving it, you know, the quivering lip and getting a bit emotional as Edge is saying it in the embrace. And then he just, go fuck yourself. Mic drop, walks out. Beautiful.
But J-Man, I am here. I am here because it's time. It's time. For the first time since 2011, for the first time properly in over 20 years, it's time for you and I to team together again. To face a team like FTR. To face a team like the Young Bucks. To show an entire generation of fans why we are inarguably one of the greatest tag teams of all time. So I am out here hat in hand, and I am asking you, let's do it. Let's end our careers together as a team. Let's show them all what we can do. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You know it's fake, right?
Yeah. But Christian has been on top of his game, like, recently. He's become this Bond villain, essentially. He always wears turtlenecks, even where he wrestles.
Sleeveless turtlenecks.
Jesus Christ.
That's and so he's very, like...
Only one man can put a bit off.
He's very over the top, but he believes in it so fully. And in today's wrestling, everyone's just so excited to break character and tell you on a podcast, oh, here's how he did this, or here's how he came out of this. He's actually just, like, staring character, which is... It's weird because the whole wrestling business was around don't break character, kayfabe, all that kind of stuff, and then now his gimmick now is kind of targeting people with, like, dead parents, and then just cuts scathing promos about your dad's dead, and then just goes into them for like 10 minutes about, yeah, I bet you feel bad when your dad died.
Your dad was a legend in the business of professional wrestling. Not my words, other people's. I think he was a bit overrated, kind of thing. But it's great. We're almost in 2024. Jeff Jarrett and Christian are the two main baddies in AEW. Oh, and they were doing that 25 years ago in the 90s, so it's tremendous.
And both from the good land of Canada.
Double G's Tennessean.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Oh, I take that back.
He's a bit southern as he can get.
Yeah, I don't know what I made me think that.
Maybe thinking of somebody else.
I do tend to gravitate towards Canadians.
But yeah, it is exciting time of wrestling right now where people are going back and forth. It's kind of like, almost like Attitude Era, where it's like, oh my god, you never know who's going to pop up next. And it's kind of a competition where it's like, if you bring someone from another company, you have to treat them well, because then that signals to the rest of the people from that company, here, come in, you'll get a title, you'll get this big thing.
To give them a good run. More exposure, yeah.
So, if you come over and then they treat you like crap, why is anyone else going to move?
But at the same time, like, there's only so many titles and so on you can do. Like, what are the existing guys who kind of started this? Is there any beef there? Or did they make that into a storyline?
Well, yeah, there was a bit when Cody Rhodes came back to WWE, Seth Rollins, it was just like, oh yeah, you want to get back to the big time? Yeah, welcome to the secondary show.
Treading that line between.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he generally does want to go back there. Yeah, generally really does.
And so yeah, it is kind of, it's hard to make people believe in stuff, but when it's like, that's real. I have left this country. I no longer to be interested there anymore. I want to come here. That's as real as you can get nowadays. So it is pretty exciting, because then you have to treat everything as a big deal to get people to watch.
I'm listening to Krusty's Third Limo, and my favourite Sunday afternoon movie is Empire Records. Right? Because it is a boosting movie. It is like one of those movies that you watch and you just think, I'm good. Like, I love my life. Like, it's every day is Rex Manning Day. Oh, it is a movie about, like, a bunch of losers. Maybe not losers. Let's not say losers. Let's say they're the down and outs. But at the end of the day, they win the game. You know, they win the audience. It's basically just a game of life, you know. It's basically like, everyone thinks you need to be popular to win that game, but you don't need to be popular. You just need to be yourself. And that's what it's all about. Be yourself. No one's popular, everyone is a winner. And that's what it's all about. And that's what Empire Records gives to me.
Good, cool. Good. Right, so I had a free Saturday night recently and I wanted to watch something good. So yes. I scoured the internet for like what to get inspiration. And stumbled upon In Bruges.
Brilliant.
Now, I've seen it before, and I thought, fuck that, it was so long ago, I really geared up for this, right?
Yeah.
And then wasn't on any, like, subscription thing that I had. So I couldn't.
Yeah.
So I play it legal like that.
So do we.
Yeah.
And And it was good because I knew it was brilliant, so there was no legal means to get it, and I was like, fuck's sake. So, but I could have paid someone for it, and I was like, well, fuck that. Nah. So, back to the drum board, but I kind of got us in the mood for that, like a dark comedy, mm-hmm. sort of something along the same lines. So then I just went on to Google, like, things like in Bruges.
Yeah.
And then this thing came up.
The Banshee of.
Nope, not quite. It's called Seven Psychopaths.
Is that not Colin Farrell film?
Colin Farrell.
I've heard of it. I remember seeing the trailer and thinking that looks fucking good. That was really good.
It's fucking good. Colin Farrell plays Marty. He's an alcoholic writer, right? And a lot of this will chime with something we've seen recently, right?
Okay.
So he's looking for struggling to write a screenplay. So he's kind of pitching for ideas to his pals and so on, right? Mm. He's got a title, Seven Psychopaths, but he's not got any psychopaths yet to put in it. and his kind of idea was that every psychopath would have their own little story, but that'd be kind of off kilter, like someone a bit different, like a priest or something like that.
Right,
somebody
okay.
who had a little axe to grind, and not necessarily a killer psychopath, but a psychopath had the same. That's all he's got. But
so like clashing personalities and stuff like that.
Yeah, and maybe wouldn't necessarily be linked at the start, but maybe like later on they would come entwined in or so on, right? Okay. That's all he's got. So he's looking for inspiration, right? He's got, luckily for him, he's got a couple of fucking oddball pals, right? Played by Christopher Walken and Sam Rockwell, who, one of them is like an out-of-work actor, and Christopher Walken's just like an older guy, obviously.
Yeah.
They make a living by kidnapping rich people's dogs, right? And waiting for the ransom money.
I remember something happened
with
Lady
Gaga's dogs. And then
just like
turn around and saying, look,
I found them.
Yeah. And they get the money. So that's cutting a bit early, stealing people's dogs, right?
Tarek's just got a light bulb above his head now.
Wait, whose dog can I get?
I think that's been in the news this week about Lady Gaga.
Yeah, I remember that recently.
What happened there?
Kind of that, like somebody.
Really?
I think she had a dog walker.
The dog walker
was out, she had like French bulldogs, and I think he got shot. He shot him, stole the dogs, and then a couple of days later, this broad comes back with the dogs, like, oh, you said you were given so many hundreds of thousands
seen
in reward money.
Yeah.
She never got the money because I kind of. Reading the Cliff's Notes on the BBC, I think she knew full well what was going down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably too obvious, yeah. And see if they come back pristine as well. You gotta dirt them up a bit and act like they've escaped the original captor and you've found them in the wild.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen that wee interaction between Gaga and that person. Have you seen Seven Psychopaths?
She's like, no. You get him at work in Hollywood. I've fucking seen the movies. But what happens is they kidnap the wrong dog, right? They kidnap the little beloved Shih Tzu of a gangster played by Woody Harrelson. But Colin Farrell, Marty, uses all this as inspiration and ends up writing a movie about all the psychopaths that are going around him, right? Yeah. And he's ticking them off one by one. Like he's finding out that people that he kind of knew for ages were actually a fucking psychopath. Right? it's very like meta in the way that the Nicolas Cage film was, where they are starring and making the film as the film goes on.
So
what's going on is the kind of play that Colin Farrell wants to write, essentially. So very like autobiographical, but it's dead dark. It's funny, and I'd say there's great performances, but it does get silly towards the end. But it's like, see, Friday night sort of movie, beer in your hand, it's perfect.
Hi, is this your dog?
Oh my God. I have to pay you. Thank you so much.
Are you serious?
And how's everything in the dog kidnapping business?
Get a new dog?
Why were you walking him, Charisse?
I always loved Bonnie like he was my own child.
One, I do not want that image in my head. Two, could you go get my dog back?
Some punks jumped us.
Who are you?
Said they were looking for a little Shih Tzu. Then some other punk killed those punks. It's their blood. It's his puke.
You want to go to the bathroom? Clean some of the blood and the puke off you?
I almost got killed today because you kidnapped the wrong dog.
Are you being serious?
Wow.
What
are we gonna do?
We could take on all the bad guys, maybe in the desert.
And what do you think we should do in real life?
How you doing?
What's your name?
Shut up. We'll get you back to your daddy in a day or two. Don't be sad.
Pa. Pa. No, Pa. That's okay, too.
I mean, just imagine it's just like, it's a bunch of funny like sequences or something like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Kind of like, you know, the like, bits of like Snatch or Lockstar 2 or Smoking Barrels. It's not uber serious parts, so it's just like, they're just arguing with each other.
Yeah. You're that Burn After Reading type?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I think there's like, he said Tarantino was a kind of inspiration at one point as well. Yeah. But there's bound to be people listening to this like absolutely screaming at the fucking bleeding obvious here. But in Bruges, Seven Psychopaths and Banshees of Inisherin are done by the same guy.
Is it?
Yeah, so it's Martin McDonagh.
Well, written or directed or?
Written.
Written, sorry, the same.
Martin McDonagh is a British-Irish writer. Did loads of plays, but in Bruges was his first movie. Mm. And then 4 years later, he did Seven Psychopaths. And as we've mentioned, like, he plays with his own experience in writing as well, and this is pretty clever too. So in Seven Psychopaths, Colin Farrell gets slagged for like the no Colin Farrell, but I think maybe Martin McDonagh got criticised that his female characters, maybe in Bruges as well,
were
kind of cannon fodder, just there turning up just to be somebody's wife or just to be somebody's girlfriend, just to get killed or whatever, right? Mm. So he was playing on that, I think, in Seven Psychopaths. But then his next movie was Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Mm. And the lead actress in that, Frances McDormand, won every fucking best actress thing that he could do.
There you go. So
it's self-fulfilling a wee bit. But he knew, it's almost as if he knew that and was playing that because his pal, in the Colin Farrell's pal, Sam Rockwell, is... I think he criticised him, or maybe it was Crystal Walken, any of the two. So he's reading the screenplay, and he says, I've got one criticism, like, your female characters are just fucking shit.
He knows.
So there you go, that's the only four movies that he's done. In Bruges, Seven Psychopaths, Three Billboards, and then Banshees.
And that Banshees one, is that quite recent, where he was chopping off his fingers?
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Last year. Great.
And that's another big, that was a big Oscar contender winner kind of like film. So, this guy's doing well for himself.
Yeah, his mates with Big Colin. And I love Colin Farrell as well. I actually can't get enough of him. I think he's brilliant.
I think he could do any genre. You know what I mean? Like, the last two kind of films that I've seen him in was The Batman, where he was Penguin.
Right.
And then probably The Gentleman, I think.
Maybe. The Gentleman. Kills it in that, doesn't
he?
He does comedy really well. Farrell. He just feels amazing at it.
But in Seven Psychopaths, he kind of downplays it because everybody else is mental.
He's like the straight guy,
So, yeah, that's it. I would thoroughly recommend.
Did we recommend the Banshees of
Inisherin?
Probably did, yeah.
I can't remember if we talked about that because I remember watching it and thinking, I definitely need to.
I don't think we've kind of put it down and spoken about it.
Maybe one for the future.
Maybe one for the future.
Aye. Right, I'll go into my second one.
Oh, you got two.
I've got two.
Bring it.
It's all good. So Izzy put me onto this one. Well, I put on her because I thought it was going to be pretty shite. So I said, oh, that's something you might like.
I'm getting flashbacks to last week's not so recommend.
No, this is a good recommend. Because then when she said, oh, it's a real good, I said, okay, I'll go watch it. And it's the Only Murders in the Building.
So I've heard good things about that, yeah.
So
Disney.
So it's nice, kind of light-hearted comedy. So you've got Steve Martin, he plays Charles Jackson Savage, who was a 70s, 80s actor, played Brazzo. And then you've also got Martin Short, he's a kind of producer, his name's Oliver Putnut, and Selena Gomez. So that's the three main characters, okay? So Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. Gomez, she plays a girl called Mabel, and she's quite straight-laced and sarcastic and stuff. So these three people, they live in a big luxurious building in the middle of New York called Arconia. Sierra Gomez, she's just staying in her auntie's apartment while she's trying to get it done up. Like I said, Martin Short, he's a producer who made a theatre producer who made a play and it absolutely bombed, so he's trying to build his career back up. And Steve Martin, back in the day, actor, and he keeps bringing it up. Oh yes, I'm Brazos, and he kind of does that wee bit. So it's a murder mystery TV series. So the great thing about this is you're given a lot of characters and you're given a lot of kind of clues throughout the episodes. And each episode's unique because each episode's got a different narrator to it. So the murder happens in the building, and these three get together and they decide, right, we're going to crack this, and they're going to create a podcast. So they do a podcast, and the podcast gets bigger and bigger, and they're doing it as they're kind of working out who the murderer is. So they're putting them out every week, so you're actually kind of see it, and then they get.
Yeah, so it's really, is it just the one murder? Is every episode a different murder, or is it just
no? It's one murder for the series.
So deaths happened in the building, and then they're making the podcast about it, and then characters will never hear what they're thinking, and then
yeah. Yeah. So you get that real time kind of.
Can you imagine, like,
wee bit,
I think it's the janitor.
Yeah, exactly. Can you imagine you say, oh, I think it's that guy down the hall, and then next day, like tomorrow you see him, it's like, why do you think I'm a killer? Like, why do you think I've done nothing wrong?
So just getting the milk.
Yeah,
some big people that turn up in there. Things in a few of the episodes, and then you've got what's his name, Ant-Man.
Paul Rudd comes in next season.
Paul Rudd, he's in the third season. I'm just kind of, I've not finished that one, so. But there's massive actors all the way through this, and it's great because you are constantly kind of guessing who you think it's going to be, and you have got the clues through there, because once you find out who it is, you're just like, right, excellent, yeah, I see how they've put this together. And the way, like I said, you've got different narrators for each episode, so the podcast gets fanboys in one of the episodes, they're narrating the whole episode. So you're kind of seeing it from their point of view, which is great. And there's another guy in this, and he's deaf. And they do one episode in silence. So it's just subtitles and just him doing his sign language throughout the whole episode.
Masker had done that as well with Aziz Ansari.
Yeah?
Good episode, yeah.
So it's very quirky.
So yeah, it's very quirky, very good. Really easy to kind of fire through a good few episodes.
This doesn't make sense.
Where do we start?
At the very beginning. I got in the elevator with these two weirdos. Then Tim got in the elevator.
Approximately 12 minutes from now, I will be murdered.
Tim Kono's death has been ruled a homicide, and apparently one of you jerk-offs did it.
I can't stop thinking about this.
Neither can I.
We should do our own true crime podcast.
We're gonna go down there and look around for clues. Do you wanna come?
Do I wanna break into a dead guy's apartment and go through all his shit? Sounds like an afternoon.
Right now, the only thing that matters is that there's a killer on the loose in our building.
Oh, that is a very good line. Badly delivered, but a good line.
I think we're onto something big here.
And these are...
candid photos I took of our neighbors?
Why are they all selfies?
So I don't draw suspicion. It's so hot in here. Do we have to do this in a closet?
The acoustics are better.
And trust me, you need acoustics.
There you go.
Good. So thanks to my recommendation to Izzy for her to recommend it back to me. Me recommend it to you guys.
I got one that's quite like that. You've just reminded me of someone I've watched recently, and I'll just fire through it off the top of my head now, right?
Go for it.
It's called Poker Face. I mean, anything to you?
No.
So, talking about Gaga, yeah. So, there's this actress, and we watched someone we heard before. I think it was called Russian Doll, something like that. Her name's Natasha.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Russian Doll was big.
Have you seen Russian Doll?
Russian Doll, I've seen.
Which is she keeps dying.
Yeah.
And then going back to the same.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, come back to life and regenerate, and then just relive the same bit over and over and over, and eventually she thinks, like, fuck, I've got to find out what's happening here. This is kind of similar, and she's got this, like, quirky talent that she's just landed with, and there's no explanation for it, it's just she's given it, and the things based on her just using that. So what this is, her name's Natasha Lyonne, I think. In this, like, she plays Charlie, and she's got the ability to tell when somebody's lying. No to tell, no to say what the truth is or anything like that. Yeah, yeah. If you say something and it's a lie, she gets like a shiver or whatever. Mm. She's like, she could just tell. She could just tell. That's her thing, right? So she's working.
Shit detectors on point.
Yeah.
So the first.
That's what they should have called it.
Yeah.
First episode, she's in a casino in Vegas. And I think somebody, I can't even remember now, but I think somebody kind of kens that figures out that she's doing this, right? And uses her to try and either win or to spot cunts that are trying to win by cheating.
Right, okay.
And
employed by the house.
Employed by the house. That goes tits up, and the guy, there's somebody, there's like an ex who's after her, right?
Ooh, okay.
So then she escapes, right? And she's on the run. And there's a kind of like linear thing is that this guy, whoever it is, I can't remember if it was a gangster or ex-boyfriend or whatever, is after her. But every episode is like, so the episode 2 will start with new characters, a new setting, fucking care home, a bar, something like that, right? And the first 20 minutes will just be, it's like an episode of Columbo, where something happens and somebody dies, right? And then
she comes in and
then, lo and behold, she's like an orderly in the care home. Or she's a roadie for the band, and she ends up just by hook or crook just figuring out why the killer is and what happened, and then having to piss off again because she's getting chased. So it's all right. And I think it was good, it was interesting. Then it was like 10 episodes in the first season. I'm like, this is getting tiresome now.
It's so just the same rinse and repeat.
Yeah. I think it would have been a lot better if it was like 6. Just do that and done. But there was no need for the other ends, because it's like, how many times could you actually interest
me? See, if it's not like, if you don't have an active reason, like there's a lot of cop shows like that, but it's like, okay, they get called the crime scenes all the time, that's their job.
Yeah.
So if it's like in The Mentalist or something like that, or Criminal Minds, that's the reason why, but she just, it's like a bad luck charm.
Yeah, it's like she just ends up. You don't go on holiday with Jessica Fletcher because somebody's got fucking.
Yeah. She's a fucking connection here.
Yeah.
And there's no like.
The worst road trip
see,
ever.
See, like episode 7, you'd expect her to say, "Fuck's sake, man, what is going on?"
Yeah.
Like, I'm sitting the scene out. Kind of like as a nod to you guys. Uh-huh. But nah, just goes and does it.
Because it's the girl from American Pie.
Is she in that?
She's
She went off the rails for about a decade or so, I think.
Aye.
Which is a kind of comeback.
Is she the one-time in band camp girl?
No. She's,
she's messing about.
Tara Reid's pal.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what she does. She's got the curly hair.
Which is pretty distinctive. Like, she's got this, like, raspy sort of voice. She's like, smokes at a time. She's got a kind of good kind of don't give a fuck attitude in general, and she gets on be like the kind of the right people, the kind of cool people. Something's to her detriment in this, but
she was good in The Russian Dolls. Oh, I really liked that. Thought that was decent.
I gave up on that, to be honest.
Save you.
Yeah.
Too much of the same day.
That's it. Yeah. How could this hurry up, man?
I guess Groundhog Day solved it like an hour and a half.
There you go.
What's it like? Always knowing the truth.
I could just tell.
When anyone is lying.
Yeah. I think there's been a murder. Look out! I have been kind of a death magnet.
He's a human lie detector.
I'm trying to figure out what happened.
You ever gamble? Because you can make a killing.
Nah.
That's it. That's all I've got.
Are we done with the recommends?
Yeah.
I have an avoid.
Oh, good. Are you want to recommend anything else, Mark?
I kind of mentioned it the other day, but I've got a really obscure niche box set that I'm sure none of your listeners have heard about.
Yeah, here you go.
It's called Breaking Bad.
Oh.
No, that would be very quickly my recommendation if you've not seen it for 10 years, because I hadn't. I watched it when it came out, binged it at the time and thought, it's shit hot, it's maybe just about creeping into my top 10. But I was aware at the time I watched it too quick. So 10 years later, Lauren and I rewatched it. We're very disciplined, one episode a night. so you can dwell on it.
Era, and,
we and Dan have talked about that a lot, about things sitting with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe like, again, with hindsight, maybe you don't want some episodes of Breaking Bad to sit with you because it gets out of hand. But it's an interesting show to rewatch.
Better Call Saul when it's coming out, and I was watching that last season week by week by week, and it did feel like an event when that episode came out, and the online was a buzz and everything. Like, oh my god, this happened.
That's good, yeah. Mm.
And I felt like more because things were getting dissected and talked about more openly. If it was just released, then it'd be like, oh, this person died, and like that's all people remember. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
because if it gets released as a season, then you're getting spoiler alerts 4 hours later.
Exactly, but with Breaking Bad, I think it's kind of tough to convince people now that haven't seen it. I know people have seen a couple of episodes or the first season, and
the hype's too big.
You hate to be that first person. It's like, oh no, keep going. Or like, I know the season isn't that amazing, but it's keep going. But it is true when it comes to Breaking Bad, because like they had that, like the first season was troubled, and they were gonna kill Jesse Pinkman off for the first season, and then it wasn't getting picked up on TV, and then it just blew up.
I'm keen to hear more of it, Matt, because did hold Breaking Bad up quite high. Mm-hmm. Since seen Better Call Saul, and just recency bias.
Yeah.
100% recency bias. Breaking Bad is slipping down the pecking order for me.
And definitely worth a rewatch then.
That's interesting.
But it's just, I found it interesting to watch because, like, the usual setup for a show, the squeaky clean cop that's just wanting to catch the bad guy and look after his family and do right by his nephew, he's the good guy, he's the protagonist. And the short-tempered, egomaniac, murderous, drug-dealing billionaire is the bad guy. But because of how it's teed up in episode one, we give Walter White an awful lot of leeway. And it's like, when you watch it back, when do you turn on Walter White? If you're cheering him for Walter in the last episode of the last season, you need to go and speak to a professional. Because he's not a nice guy.
You better not get married.
It is interesting if you ask people that, because I think a lot of people would point to, spoilers for an old show, but with Jane, with this Pigman's girlfriend at the time, just what does that people turn on there, or people do it later, or
I think it was later.
Well, didn't we also I'm pointing to you guys, put Skyler in one of the most hated characters?
Maybe
the top five. Dan was like, Skyler right up there.
I think I get it, like, because again the show is, oh, let him cook and go out there and do murders. I tell you, like, you're not thinking at the time, that's really morally bad. But like, it's like, without that, what is the show? He just goes back to being a depressed teacher.
Exactly.
He needs to go out and do stuff. So it's, I guess it's interesting, that reflection of yourself, where it's like, yeah, this is going horribly wrong. And then what part do you start seeing Jesse as more the good guy? Because they kind of do like a double turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything with like Gus and everything like that. Like, he comes in and just wrecks everybody, essentially.
But it's more than that. It's cut through, like, that good, bad, black-white linear thing, isn't it? It's like, everybody's...
That's great.
But he's like, what we've got...
Everybody's great.
Like, he does that, like, a big number on, like, he turns them against each other and stuff like that. So how much that is his fault rather than, you know...
I know, but even then, I think the... like the law of unintended consequences and stuff, and even season two with the plane crash.
Yeah.
It's like, strictly speaking, in terms of the narrative, it's kind of Walter's fault, but it's not really. He doesn't have any direct impact
other than
devastating the pilot for his
Mike
daughter.
Mike says
and stuff.
A lot in Breaking Bad.
And
or
I think if there's a lot of time lapsed, you'll enjoy it. There's a lot that you'll forget. I totally, like, I remembered somebody kind of getting blown in half, but I couldn't remember it was Gustavo Fring until it happened. So you'll forget enough. But I was, like, angry when he killed Mike. So angry. Yeah. And then when Hank dies, I was devastated. Honestly, 3-4 nights, I was devastated about Hank's
life. I think
that was the first thing he said to me when I seen you on Saturday. He was like, I've just been watching Breaking Bad. I'm just not right.
Like,
the Nazi bad guys that come at the end, like, they're the proper baddies at the end. Like, you can root against them. But just Hank's little speech when he's, Walter, you're the smartest guy I know, but you're too stupid to see he made up his mind 10 minutes ago. It's hard, man. So yeah,
that's good. That's interesting.
Yeah, so I think it's going to age brilliantly. I think people and like.
I'm worried about that. I did.
I think 10, 20 years people look back and be like, yeah, that's still great. Like people, the way people talk about Sopranos now, or like The Wire now, could that be the same for Breaking Bad and later on?
I think, yeah, enough time's elapsed. I'll go back and do it. But I've got to finish Better Call Saul first, and then I'll go back.
I've never even seen any. I've seen a couple episodes of Better Call Saul.
Yeah,
like right when it started, so I've kind of got that.
That's
to
just
I think
you're
like
so slow, yeah. But yeah, it is really good.
I didn't do this, but it's going to benefit you for having the rewatch
quite recently.
So recently, so I would maybe make it. Don't make it the next one, because it's too gut wrenching.
Yeah,
like to talk about what you're going
through.
Too
close to the bone.
Too close. You need to go back. Watch Community for another
6 months. Some scars back in your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes you see sometimes when I watch a horror film, it's like, you know what, I need an episode of Family Guy. Just bring me back.
We watch Bugs Bunny.
Since the pandemic, like Lauren and I, we've just been smashing box sets every night, boom, boom, boom. And then after Breaking Bad, it was like we took a break from TV for a while and just like there's something garbage on in the background and you're sitting on your phone and you're like, nah, I don't want to.
Hank,
man.
Lung cancer, inoperable.
A man provides for his family.
You want to cook crystal meth?
That's right.
You know the business.
And I know the chemistry.
This is pure glass. You're a goddamn artist.
You're onto something special. And I would like to be a small and silent part of it.
I will kill your wife. I will kill your son. I will kill your infant daughter.
We're gonna start cooking again.
Who is it you think you see? I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot. You think that of me? No, I am the one who knocks.
Either we're all going home and none of us are.
We're done when I say we're done.
One more thing before we go to you, Dan, was it's funny that you mentioned having to dissect an episode and let it sit on you. I was watching Lupin and something absolutely horrifying happens so many episodes in, and me and Leah are lying in bed watching Netflix, right? And that was like, we said, we'll watch one more and we'll go to sleep. So, and that was the one. It was the end, and I'm like, I can't go to sleep with that. Let's just please watch the next half an hour or the next 10 minutes of the next episode so we can just see. And if it did transpire that's the case, fine, but at least I've got someone else to think about. Man!
It's funny because I got my mum to watch Severance,
right,
a show I've talked about before. And yeah, it ends with you wanting a lot more. And she's quite like, oh my god, like what was happening next? You gotta let me know. I'm just like, the season two is not out yet. I'm sorry, I gotta tell you, there's a strike going on.
Why did you do her dirty like that, man?
Is that Adam Scott in Severance?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of him.
It's on Apple TV, so it's hard to find. But it's worth it. Yeah.
Make a fresh air break, I think.
Yeah,
it's very worth it.
Hello, my name's Danny, representing Law Brewery in Dundee, here with Krusty's Third Nipple. And my favourite Sunday movie would probably be something like Spartacus. Because I like Kirk Douglas and all his retro stuff, yeah.
Right, Daz, you said you've got something for people to avoid.
Avoid, yes.
What's annoyed you? What's ground your gears?
Well, you'd have to go out your way to avoid it, but still, make that trip. So... my friend Samuel said, oh, here, there's this special screening of this film. It's got this independent film, Scottish film, only good put in 7 Odeons around Scotland. So I was like, oh wow, lucky us, it's going to be in the right next to where I live. I was like, wow, okay. There's a cottage called Mercy Falls, a bunch of people going to like the woods,
oh,
and then something goes wrong.
That's all really shit.
And so I'm like, okay, you know what, why not? Because I got the limitless and everything like that. It's no, like, it cost to actually buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. So we go with some friends, go there, and ugh, it is pretty bad. But here's the catch. It came with a Q&A afterwards as well. And so you're watching this film, so I thought, you know what, it'd be interesting to see what these indie filmmakers are doing. And no, it's just like the film you've seen 100 times before, and all the inspirations are just on its sleeve. Like, it's clearly, like, there's a character that is just Rambo from First Blood, and she just doesn't have any difference, right? Like, the exact same.
Apart from being female.
Well, yeah, but for actual backstory and stuff like that, and then she goes crazy and starts killing people. But it's like, it's boring, it's long, it's bad acted, it's predictable. It's just, you're sat there by the end of it just like, this is the most basic film I've ever seen. Like,
did you open with that at the Q&A?
No, it's a pre-recorded Q&A after. But
oh,
then
the, is it? Like, yes, there's, but no, then, there's no way the writer's sitting there.
No. But it's got them on a stage with some guy, and then it goes to the audience, but it's just clearly their family and friends and stuff like that. But for the first 10 minutes of this
act... Hang on, that would be the first Krusty live show as well. So
no, but this director acted like it was brilliant, and he was like very full of himself. And then like all the other people on stage were just, they kind of... they knew how bad it was, but they just didn't want to say. They could see it on their faces. And then the director's like, well, you know, I was getting made to just direct Christmas movies, and I really just wanted to go out of my shell. And what better than that, to direct a horror film? And he just felt like he was like, oh, just remove the shackles. I'm like, no, get the shackles back on.
Stay in your lane.
Go back to the ho-ho-hos. Not this.
Go back to the ho-ho-hos.
But by the end of it, you're just begging for it to end. And then it came to this Q&A. I was like, I forgot it was Q&A. Oh my God, and it was the worst. So we've been just hammering Samuel over it whenever he says any suggestion ever again. We're just,
so well, how does a pre-recorded Q&A work?
Well, like after a screening, like they've just got a camera up of the director and all that stuff, and they've done the Q&A after everyone in the audience have seen it. And then that's recorded and then played after the film.
So you're not taking part in it, you're just watching.
No.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's kind of like when I went to see the Rocky IV remaster and had the Q&A, they had it at the start, and there's a bunch of people just asking Sylvester Stallone questions. But then that was a great film. Yeah. That was the biggest difference. But
Rocky IV is maybe the best.
Yeah.
Did you not see? Yeah. Did you not see in the last episode that's a montage with like pretending to be a film or something like that?
Yeah, so that's why it's great. I love it. But essentially, this is now like come almost like historically bad in the friend group. Like this is like up there with some of the worst films I've ever seen.
I need to watch it.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard to find, but. I didn't find like there was a, like, you know, like a lot of indie people that I, oh, I've got this great idea. It's always sometimes like a budget lets them down. No, nothing let this down because this is just terrible.
Right. Well, on that note, that brings us to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Right, take us home.
So you know what to avoid, Mercy Falls and the Q&A. What to watch.
Sorry, the Q&A sounds more interesting to see the guy squirrel.
One of my favourite was the audio technician who's just sat there with his like Hawaiian shirt, 3 buttons unbuttoned on the stage. He's like 60 years old, silent for most of it, gets to say 3 words and then that's it. But yes, yeah, so now you know what to avoid, what to watch. And for the next time, we'll be back discussing the Scottish film with people going to the woods. It's a lot better. Calibre.
Just a tiny bit better.
Just a tiny bit. And I think we'll have a guest on for that one as well.
Yeah, we're working on it.
No?
No?
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Did he say he was coming?
think he's up for it.
Aye, fair
game. I spoke to him at the weekend about it, and he says, hey, it's good vibes coming on, it's good vibes. So I think he's up for it.
I don't know if Blackie was great.
I was going to do a Scottish movie quiz here, but I think I'll save it for that.
I'll
save it for then. So it's a part of that episode.
Yeah,
because it's kind of connected to that.
Yeah, but also we'll be continuing our episode by episode review of The Bear.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of episodes of that coming up, and so yes. So for the next time we'll be doing that, and that's all from me. Dad, do you want to say anything?
I'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
And our guest, do you want to say anything?
Until next time, take care of yourself. And each other.
Yeah.
Oh,